Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
What a day if you're an NBA fan. Good news. And then there's the bad news, of course, with what happened. For anybody that likes sports and anybody like good coverage of sports, I'm at Nick Ashew on all the socials. Take you up till 10. Talk to Ben Strober at 7. Locked On Wizards. A little more on the Anthony Davis trade to the Wizards. Absolutely shocking. And now look, there were reports that Anthony Davis could be on the move. There were reports that teams were interested. And it was pretty much known that the Mavs, once Nico Harrison got fired, they said, this is it. We are going to just kind of redo this thing from scratch, because this has now gone down as the worst trade in sports history, the Luka Doncic trade that brought Anthony Davis to the Mavs, which is now done. So the Wizards give up, really, I mean, some young players, but not guys that you're looked at as the forefront of your future, your foundation. Marvin Bagley knew was going to be on the move. They give up some first-round picks. They're going to be late first-round picks. They get Anthony Davis. They get a Dante Exum, who adds some depth at point guard. And D'Angelo Russell will bring a little bit of that to the table. And, you know, he's been around the league a bunch, but there's a level of talent there. Jaden Hardy's a nice young player. And the Wizards absolutely fleece the Mavs in this deal. And Anthony Davis' stock was at an all-time low. And I go back to saying what I have said for some time about the Wizards now. This front office knows what they're doing, man. I still hate the Trae Young trade, but as I've said, the Trae Young trade can work if there's no long-term commitment. But right now, if you're the Wizards and you're looking at your young core, the main guys sticking together, you add an Anthony Davis, who, when he's healthy, is one of the best bigs in the NBA. Problem is he's never healthy. And you look at the rest of this season, and then you look at next season, and you say there is a chance they could have a top three pick. That could be a franchise-altering talent in one of the most loaded drafts that we have had in the NBA in a long, long time. Add that guy, Darren Peterson from Kansas, let's say, to a Wizards team that has Anthony Davis playing 50% of his games, probably. Trae Young, next year, at least makes them exciting enough where they're a push for the play-in tournament and maybe an actual playoff team next year. And we are going to see the trajectory of this Wizards team go from absolutely no direction, wandering the desert aimlessly, stuck in NBA purgatory, to finally gutting this thing, rebuilding, starting from scratch, doing it the way that you need to do in the NBA if you want to actually build a winner. And then we look at them next year as a potential playoff team. That's a turnaround, and that's a rebuild. Now, do I see Anthony Davis and Trae Young as long-term solutions to this roster? No, and I don't think that that's something that they should commit to. But what it shows now is you are a team that's given yourself flexibility. You have players that are all-star caliber when they're at their best and they're healthy. You have players that also have contracts that can be valuable in other trades. And you also show that you're serious. So if this team next year, with Anthony Davis and Trae Young healthy, starts winning games in an Eastern Conference that's showing you it's still really wide open, and it'll be relatively wide open next year, because the main thing is the Celtics aren't fully healthy. Even if Jason Tatum's back next year, okay. There's plenty of room for new maneuvering if you're the Wizards in the East. So if you have that, and then the rest of the league starts to see, okay, this is different now in Washington. This organization is running things differently. They're looking for something long-term. They've got somebody in their front office that was part of the Oklahoma City Thunder front office that, oh, this model of the way they're rebuilding looks eerily similar to what the Thunder have done. The future is so, so bright for the Wizards. Now, this doesn't mean that this is a absolute home run with everything they've done, and it's all going to work out and everything's going to be great. There are more things you have to do. You certainly have to have luck in the lottery. We all know that, and we know that that's not really the Wizards' specialty, except for John Wall, and that goes back a long way, but we were able to at least relive that last week. But you still have the foundation and a blueprint and a clear mindset of what you're trying to do, what the goal is, and you're on the right path to get there, which is so far above and beyond the way things have been run there for far too long. Now, some of it is extenuating circumstances. Some of it has been going way back and teams getting blown up because of guns in the locker room or injuries or just things not working out with a roster. Not every guy hits, whatever the case is. The reality is here now, this is how you rebuild a team in the NBA. And I would not even look at Anthony Davis as somebody that's a long-term fit for this team. I wouldn't look at Trae Young as a long-term fit for this team. It's short-term, allowing you to have some flexibility. And that's the most important thing that they could do at this stage right now. Plus, a team that has a lot of young guys on this roster, you're also like, look at the Utah Jazz. They're absorbing some big contracts. You can turn those contracts around in trades. You can flip guys again next year for somebody that's maybe more of a long-term fit if you want an expiring contract like a Trae Young sent out to somebody else. Like, there is a lot of flexibility here, and flexibility in today's NBA is the name of the game. The NBA has made it so it's really difficult to rebuild a team, and it's really difficult on top of that to be really aggressive in free agency or putting a bunch of stars together. Like, they've tried to eliminate the super team. Second apron, all that. You've heard all these terms that may bore the hell out of you, but they exist. This is how you do it. And I'm not saying it's going to be perfect, but what I am saying is this is exactly where you need to be if you're the Wizards. All right, we'll talk to Ben Strober at 7. PJ Glasser also live from San Francisco at 7:30. Nick Ashew on the Fan.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Nick Ashew on the Fan. Sometimes in life, it takes a little while for you to get a full picture of something, to really give it a true judgment, to really understand what the results were of a decision. Happens all the way around the world. All kinds of stuff. For the longest time, the Deshaun Watson trade was the worst trade in sports history, given the results, given what was get up, given the contract, Cleveland, all of that. And then Nico Harrison came along and said, hold my beer. Now, the Luka Doncic trade already seemed bad enough and was already in the conversation. You looked at it last year and went, what the hell were you thinking, especially given all that you could have gotten back had Luka actually been on the market? Then Nico Harrison gets fired, and then the conversation starts about the Mavs maybe looking to move on from Anthony Davis. And then they trade Anthony Davis to the Wizards. And now you sit and look at what they got back. It's a bunch of scraps, some second-tier young players, a bunch of late first-round picks. And that's about it for Luka Doncic. Think about that for a minute. Now, the Wizards benefited from this, right? I mean, again, like I said, this trade works for them. It may be more of a short-term, but it works for them. Healthy Anthony Davis is one of the best bigs in the NBA. I don't think we'll see Anthony Davis or Trae Young out there for the Wizards at all this year because they don't want to win games. They don't want to be a fringe playoff team. They want to lose, and they want a great draft pick. And then start next year, you've got two guys on the roster in Trae Young and Anthony Davis that at least can make you a fringe playoff team. I don't think Trae Young makes this team anything more than that, and I've said that many times, but from where they are now to where they want to be next year, it makes sense in the short term. But if you're looking at how this went down from a Mavs perspective, there are some times in life where there are people that just think they're smarter than everybody else in the room, and you're just wrong. You see it in management. You see it in the government. You see it in all walks of life. And you definitely see it with some front office people in sports, whether it's the NFL or the NBA or the NHL or Major League Baseball. It doesn't matter. Nico Harrison was a guy that thought he was smarter than everybody else in the room. And the way that the Mavs have unraveled that trade to the Wizards' benefit now in this sense and to the Lakers' benefit with Luka, I mean, the collateral damage from that massive brain fart to think you're outthinking everybody. Well, defense wins championships. Yeah, so do stars. You need somebody in the NBA where you can put the ball in their hands in the fourth quarter in a playoff game and say, go win us the game. You have to have that. That was Luka. That was not Anthony Davis. Now, if you're the Wizards, this isn't about championships just yet. Right? Like, that's not what it's about. This is right now about getting a team together with a young core and some veterans and some guys that can help kind of elevate them to the next level. Now, one thing I do want to keep in mind, we'll talk to Ben Strober in about 5 minutes here. What does this mean for somebody like an Alex Sard? Again, I don't think Anthony Davis plays even at all this year. Maybe late in the season when, you know, here's the thing. You don't need to have the worst record in the NBA to have the number one overall pick. In fact, it's better that you don't because they've smoothed out the lottery system so much that it just does not work in your favor. It's like the basketball gods come in and say, you tanked too much, unless you're the Spurs, and then you get Victor Wembanyama, and then you tanked too much, so now you're going to fall in the lottery. In the NFL, you at least know. So everybody that talks about tanking being a problem in the NBA, why aren't we talking about it more in the NFL? When you know the worst record gets you the number one overall pick. It's almost like it's guaranteeing that you're going to have it if you continue to lose when the NBA doesn't guarantee it. But anyway, nobody ever seems to want to bring that up. But if you are the Wizards now, it's really important that you focus on the young player development. You, at this point, cross your fingers and hope, hey, we get that number one overall pick. Even top three, you're going to be in a great spot to get a really talented player. And then it starts to be more of a let's build on this thing, let's start becoming a playoff team, and let's win now. And I'll tell you this, and I've said it so many times, and I will say it again. D.C. is a hoops town too, man. I know a lot of people forget that. D.C. is a hoops town. And at least maybe last week, all of the celebrating of John Wall and, you know, that should remind people how things can get in terms of a rabid fan base and an excited fan base when it comes to great basketball in D.C. Now, it doesn't happen a lot. It's been a long time. But this city cares, man. The city really cares. And the Wizards are now, even though they're not going to win this year, they're a team that's a fun watch. They're a team with a plan. They're a team where the arrow's pointing up, and they're a team showing you we ain't going to sit around and just be some losing young team forever. We have steps in mind, and we are taking those steps strategically. This was a big move for them. This was. Even if it's short term, this gives you much more credibility, and that's something that matters around the league as a free agent destination, as an organization that just people will take seriously again and look at and say, okay, they actually care about basketball. All right, we'll talk to Ben Strober next of Locked On Wizards. Nick Ashew on the Fan.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I mean, what a day. What a day. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Anthony Davis is a Wizard. We will get to what happened to the Washington Post, don't you worry. Because it ain't like I don't have experience with a poorly managed. Never mind. We'll just wait till we get to that point. Ben Strober, host of the Locked On Wizards podcast, jumps on with me now. You know, you and I have talked, Ben, and I love what the Wizards are doing, minus the Trae Young trade, though. Again, short term, I think that thing works. I always have to have that caveat with this. But, I mean, this came out of nowhere. There were a lot of rumors that Anthony Davis might get moved again. It's very clear that the Mavs just wanted to wipe away anything that Nico Harrison completely ruined there in Dallas. But here's Anthony Davis, now a Wizard, injured. I don't even think we're going to see him this season because they want to do everything they can to make sure they don't fall out of the top eight. First off, just your overarching reaction to this trade and the shock that I'm sure you probably felt when you learned the news.
It's so funny how the NBA trade deadline works, Nick, because I was just scrolling and I got a notification saying that the Wizards had put in interest for Domantas Sabonis from Sacramento. And I'm like reading through it. I'm like, okay, that's intriguing. Like Sabonis is a good player. It makes sense to put a big alongside Alex Sarr here. And then I get the notification, Anthony Davis trade, and I click on it. I see Wizards. And then I get called by four people. I'm like, there's just no way. And that's where we are right now. I was shocked, to be honest with you. But the way it's worked out, this was always a possibility with this front office because of the way they've managed their assets and creating financial flexibility was exactly to make a move like this. You take in unwanted contracts to a team from a team like Dallas that frankly made this move, one, because they wanted to get a couple shots at some young players like A.J. Johnson in this situation, but also they wanted to clear up a lot of cap. I think Dallas cleared up around $70 million in cap by getting the expiring contracts in Marvin Bagley and Chris Middleton. So good foresight from the Wizards front office as well. When they brought in Middleton, knowing that he was an expiring, that they can move Bagley, they could sign him to be a backup center, then move him once again. Here's a funny fact for you. Marvin Bagley gets traded 2 years in a row, and he got more in return for Washington in those trades than Bradley Beal ever did.
Well, listen, the Bradley Beal deal should have happened 2 or 3 years before they actually did it.
Oh, but, yeah.
You know, listen, this I'm at least seeing now with what this front office has done. And, you know, listen, this is – you have somebody in that front office that was a part of what the Oklahoma City Thunder built, and you're seeing that same model. And I think that this is the right approach, and I've certainly really liked it. Before we look at some of the young players and how this affects them, I do – you know, when it comes to Anthony Davis and Trae Young, and some of this is speculation, I talked to, you know, a couple people after the Trae Young deal happened in, around the NBA, and there, what I was generally given in terms of what their plan was is it's going to be a wait and see. No guarantee of Trae Young being short term, no guarantee of him necessarily being long term. When it comes to now Anthony Davis and Trae Young, both as a part of this, different contracts, I understand. What do you just think, or what have you heard that could be the... I guess let's look at it as the long term, or how long they're a part of this organization.
It's interesting because from what I've heard, I actually just was on with the Locked On Mavericks guys. The inclination in Dallas is that Anthony Davis and his agent were looking for an extension in Dallas. That obviously wasn't going to happen. So moving on from the Mavericks seemed like always the case in this situation. And it was just whether or not like Dallas was going to get what they actually wanted in this deal. So that is an interesting caveat that I think we're going to have to monitor going forward, is that he and his agent are looking to get an extension. I think Washington might have to wait and see what happens within this draft process this year, because obviously like the goal for this year hasn't changed. Anybody that thinks they're doing this is ruining their tank. That's nonsense. They'll lose plenty of games. Did you see the game the other night? They still can't play defense right now in their current state. So they'll lose plenty of games. They'll keep their draft pick. If you land in the top three or whatever and you get Boozer, then I don't know. Does it not make sense to extend Anthony Davis to that point? Because you have Boozer waiting in the wings to blossom into the star player that he probably will become in this league. Then I don't know. But if you end up landing Darren Peterson, then maybe if you feel like Anthony Davis actually has something left in the tank that's worthy of an extension, then you look at it like that. I think we're going to have to wait until the summer to really see what the end game is here with a guy like AD.
Yeah, and listen, Alex Saar is certainly in a position here, too, where this could affect him in some ways. And if there's no Anthony Davis out there this year, I mean, it's still maybe the possibility of next year. And he's played a little bit alongside Valanciunas when he was still there. And I think it was like 140 minutes, 138 minutes total they played. So it wasn't very much in terms of them being together when he was at, what, the four? Anyway, the point here is that we've seen a little bit of Alex Saar, but that's like the younger, less experienced Alex Saar. Last year versus this year, we've seen all this growth. What does this do for Alex Saar in terms of his development? Again, if Anthony Davis doesn't play at all this year, then they just keep on doing what they're doing. But there is still then at least the next year question, too.
So this is going to make life a lot easier for him, especially defensively. Because if you look at what Saar's done as a rim protector here in year number two, it's obviously impressive because he was leading the NBA in blocks for a pretty substantial part of the season when Wembanyama wasn't qualifying to be on the list. But if you just look at how many shots he's defended at the rim and the field goal percentage he was holding people to compared to the amount of shots he was defending, it's ridiculous. His name doesn't even fit on the charts that most of these NBA analytics people are building. It's literally insane how many shots he's had to defend at the rim, because he is the anchor. He is that last line of defense for this Washington Wizards team. And if you get a big guy down there like Anthony Davis now at this point, who's always been a very good defensive player in his career, and then when he's healthy, if you have him out there to be a guy that can match up with a Carl Anthony Towns, with a Giannis Antetokounmpo, and like take a little bit of the weight off Alex Saar, who's obviously not as big and burly as a guy like Anthony Davis, I think it does wonders, because now you don't have to ask as much for him. You can have him just be that last line of defense and do what he does best, protect the rim. Offensively, if you move it on from there, hopefully this will be a situation where you can see them open the floor up a little bit for Saar. We've seen him experiment throughout his career through the first 2 years with what works, what doesn't work. Like, you've seen him hit that little turnaround fadeaway jump shot. I don't know if that's necessarily going to be part of his game long term, but I think with Anthony Davis on the floor and then your floor general and Trae Young, there's a lot of possibilities for how they could space the floor and get Saar some good looks around the rim as well.
Talking to Ben Strober here on The Fan, let's look at the rest of this trade. And I know Anthony Davis is the headline, but a Jaden Harden, D'Angelo Russell, Dante Exum. I mean, there's some pieces that bring levels of value. Jaden Harden is a relatively nice young player. Dante Exum, I mean, kind of had this little bit of a career resurgence with the Mavs, dealt with a lot of injuries early in his career. And D'Angelo Russell just plays for everybody, it seems like. But we know there's an offensive pop there. I mean, none of those guys I look at is like, oh, man, this is going to make a difference. But again, they're not trying to win games now. Are we going to see them regularly out there? I mean, what do you think the rotation kind of looks like with those guys being involved?
I think you're in a situation at this point where, especially for a guy like Hardy, who's 23 years old, and from what I've been told for the guys in Dallas, he's a great garbage time player. They say that he loves to score when they're either up by 20 or down by 20. So the Wizards will probably be down by 20 in a lot of these games they play the rest of the season, especially against the really good ones. So you'll see the opportunity for a guy like Hardy to maybe get some run, see what he has, because consider me intrigued. He's a 23-year-old guy that went the G League Ignite route. So there could be something there. I know they tried to experiment with him in Dallas and make him into a point guard, which didn't really work out for him. So he's kind of been like stuck in the middle of this combo guard guy trying to figure out what he is. But maybe the Wizards give him the runway to see if he has anything. It'll probably kind of look similar to what it did last year with A.J. Johnson. And then obviously A.J. Johnson departs in this trade and goes to Dallas. So it'll be kind of like a similar situation for him. I'm not expecting a whole lot out of those guys. I think everybody at this point is just waiting to sim to the draft lottery if you're a Wizards fan.
Yeah, I mean, we look at Anthony Davis's contract and, you know, we're looking at $54 million next year, 58 player option that's going to be almost $63 million in the 27-28 season. So there's still some time left on that contract. Obviously, Trae Young is the shorter deal that they'll have to think about. Don't bring it back. That's just my thought process. But, you know, what does this now do for the Wizards in terms of just credibility around the league? Because I can tell you, I know for a fact that the reputation they had around the NBA for a long time was ownership didn't care about basketball first, that it was about hockey. And this now is an organization that is building a legit basketball team with their eyes on the long term and doing it the right way. And, I mean, to me, Ben, I look at this as they should be talking playoffs next year.
Oh, yeah, that has to be the expectation, at least the play-in, because by you making this move, you are letting your fan base know that you're not actively trying to lose anymore. That phase of your rebuild, deconstructing, is done. I mean, you saw the release that Shams put, not release, but the tweet he put out where it says the Wizards have completed their deconstruction phase. They add a 10-time All-Star and Anthony Davis here. Like, that's definitely coming directly from the front office. Shams probably just copy and pasted that. So that's them sending a message here to the NBA, to the players in the association, to the fan base, that like the Wizards don't want to be considered a joke anymore. They don't want to be considered the team that feels like they've been rebuilding for 10 years when it's actually only been three. I feel like this was always the plan, that you spend 3 years bottoming out, get as many bites at the apple as you can, manage your assets well, just keep on acquiring assets when you're in this phase, and it will lead to good things happening. And so far, because the Wizards manage their assets well, they turn Bradley Beal into Trae Young, and they turn Kyle Kuzma into Anthony Davis. That's pretty good. It's pretty good asset management, isn't it?
Let me tell you something. Again, I continue to be impressed with what they're doing. And it's doesn't mean that it's going to be perfect. And again, I know a lot of people bring up the fact that like Anthony Davis is always injured. I think that's why you probably don't talk extension with him. Me personally, I would not sign him to an extension. I just don't trust. At this point, when you're injury prone, you tend to just be injury prone in the NBA. But you have Anthony Davis under contract for, you know, a couple more seasons after this at least. So you don't necessarily have to make that decision unless he then asks for a trade again, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think you need to like rush to make any kind of deal or extend Anthony Davis in this situation. And, you know, I'll give a lot of flack to players that have been injury prone. Like, I'd say Bilal Coulibaly, one of the young pieces for this Wizard team, has been, in my opinion, pretty injury prone through the first 3 years of his career. So, you know, if I'm going to give him that treatment and say that makes me a little bit skeptical about extending a young player like that, I'm sure as hell going to think the same thing about a guy that's now 32. But we know when he is healthy, he can certainly play at a Hall of Fame level that he has his whole career. It's just, can he actually stay healthy? It's really the biggest caveat in the whole thing, but that's the risk you take on in this kind of move.
Talking to Ben Strober here on Overtime, Locked On Wizards podcast. This has been, I mean, it's just been really busy, and the trade deadline is not until tomorrow. The James Harden trade, started to hear these reports that like he could get moved again, which at the beginning of the year, that was a whisper because the Clippers were absolutely horrible, and then they realized, oh my God, if we don't keep our pick, the Thunder get it, and the whole NBA freaked out. But now you do have James Harden get traded again, which has now been becoming sort of an annual tradition, James Harden getting traded. I know he says he didn't request the trade this time. The Clippers were playing better. But, all right, James Harden now goes to Cleveland, and the Cavs are clearly looking at their situation going, we got to worry about Donovan Mitchell in an extension, and we got to show him that we want to win now. It's the prove-it-to-your-star type deal that they made. Harden has played well this year for the Clippers, but we also know that he's terrible in the playoffs. And the Cavs, year after year, have had second-round exits in the playoffs. And I know the East is wide open right now, but do you take the Cavs more seriously now? Because I look at that roster and go, all these guys have already lost a bunch in the second round. James Harden does not do things consistently across the board in the playoffs. Just kind of feels like it might end up being the same team for them.
I'd take him less seriously, if I'm being honest with you, because I think that low of James Harden at this point in his career, not because he can't hoop, but because of who he is as a playoff player. He's just not a guy that rises to the occasion in these type of games. I remember, like, many, many years ago, I noticed this, I would say it, and people said that playoff Harden was a big myth. No, it's not a myth. There's not a mistake. It's not a coincidence that this has continuously happened throughout his career. And also, I just have this kind of, like, you know, it's more of a personal thing, I guess. Like, out of all the great players that have played in the NBA in my lifetime, like, he is one of the least enjoyable players to watch, in my opinion, especially, like, what he is at this point at 36 years old. He's kind of just out there, draws a foul, like, every single play. Like, I don't know. Donovan Mitchell is great, though. Like, that's his team. Harden's going to have to take the back seat or else that's not going to work.
Yeah, and you at least have somebody in Harden that can handle the ball a little bit more, and I know Donovan Mitchell wasn't always doing that, and Darius Garland was. But yeah, it's just like the NBA is just so, the parity, at least in the East specifically this year, is, I mean, there are certainly a lot of teams that feel that way. Do we see Giannis get traded before the deadline, or is this a summertime thing?
Oh, I hope so. I hope he goes out west. Like, if he goes out west, then that just will open things up a little bit more for the Wizards. And the East will be more competitive next year than it is this year, because Jason Tatum will be back, unless he comes back this year, of course. But I don't know about that. Tyrese Haliburton, the Pacers are literally just resetting right now to get a top pick in the draft, and then they'll get Haliburton back, and they'll probably be back to being a top team in the Eastern Conference. The Knicks will be good. The Charlotte Hornets are going to be really good next year. Be on the lookout for them. It's not a mistake that they've been playing great basketball as of recent. So there's going to be competition out in the East next year.
Yeah, I mean, we saw the Timberwolves kind of make some moves. It looked like they were clearing some space for a Giannis move. The Heat reportedly have an offer that the Bucks might take. The Warriors have been doing that as well. So, I don't know. We're on Giannis watch now the rest of the way, which is just, this is the NBA, Ben, and it's why I love it. I know it doesn't involve the actual games on the court, but come on. In an 82-game schedule, this is so much fun. Good to talk to you, Ben. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, of course. Appreciate it, Nick.
There he goes, Ben Strober. Locked On Wizards does a great job with that. Make sure you check out that for the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, I mean, this is what the NBA does well. They lean into it. They can pretend that they don't, you know, we don't want super teams. Fine. But player movement, it adds to the draw. Like, here's the ultimate truth here. The NBA, like any professional sport, is entertainment first. Let's not sit here and act like it's for the quality of the game. No, this is a business. They're multi-billion dollar businesses that want big numbers, big ratings, big TV contracts, and they want to be the center of attention. And I don't fault any of them. That's good business. But you have to understand that there is going to be a level of behind-the-scenes conversations that are going to tell you things like, yeah, we love that people want to watch the games, but we also want people talking about us on social media. We want to be like, attention dollars, as the junkies always say, right? That's a real thing. And they're only getting more and more valuable because the NBA dominates social media, because it's a player and star-driven league, and that's exactly what you're getting here. All right, we'll talk to PJ Glasser in about 12 minutes or so, live from San Francisco. We'll actually get to some football for a change here. Nick Ashew on The Fan. Great song. Metal, you nailed it. Nick Ashew on The Fan. I have one of my best friends, he was my best man at my wedding too, he was about 5'7". And we would just play this song in high school just to piss him off. It was the best. I love it. I love the NBA too. I do. Listen, I get there's some people that don't like all this and call it silly season, and yeah, okay, that's fine. But in reality, like, the crazy trades make it part of the brand. And this is what the NBA, this is what all sports are. It is a brand, right? Like, rule changes have happened in sports because you want the product to be better on the field, on the court, whatever. rule changes in terms of collective bargaining agreements and, you know, some of the stuff that your eyes may glaze over because it's really maybe boring and not up your alley, and that's totally fine. But those are made to make the product better one way or the other. And the one thing that the NBA got really sick of over the years is that the NBA got really tired of the super team narrative and guys requesting trades and it being relatively easy for teams to make those moves. Now, you know, the big one obviously goes all the way back to 2016 and Kevin Durant in free agency going to the Warriors. But that was, you know, that was just based on the league getting a ton of money, new TV contracts, salary cap spiked all at once. Everybody had the space. So, like, that was a rare thing. But you started to see more and more of that over time. And, you know, as you go forward now and look at the way the NBA's tried to change things in so many different ways, this is one thing this league will do. And I give them credit for it, is that they're willing to look at something and say, nope, that didn't work, and they keep moving forward. It's the guy that created the Savannah Bananas, right? I'm reading his book. It's very interesting. Jesse Cole, right? Yeah. And you know, I just think of the banana tux. That's really all that matters. But, you know, he talks about, like, building up that brand and this crazy idea, and you try things. And if it doesn't work, oh, guess what? That didn't work. We're going to move on. The NBA has a different all-star format this year than it did last year. They're trying something different. And that's good. They've tried things to make it so there's more parity in the league. Now, parity is something that is, you know, we got to be careful. Too much parity is just boring. You want people to have an emotional investment. You want people to have, care about the league, care about the teams, care about the matchups. We have not had great rivalries in the NBA for a long, long time. And that's because of player movement. But you could argue the same thing is watered down college basketball rivalries too. Not college football, but college basketball. Now Duke, North Carolina still has the juice, but again, there's still been a lot of turnover with, you know, one and done guys, especially at Duke over the years. And, you know, there's something to be said for a level of consistency in all sports. You don't want to have the pendulum swing too far where so much player movement waters down the NBA, and they've had that for a long, long time. There's always going to be trades. There's always going to be players that are looking to go elsewhere and control their own future. And I understand that to a point. Like, that is reasonable considering you get drafted and you can get traded without wanting to. And there's a level of, I want to control my life, and I have this chance to be able to do that. So, and look, James Harden traded again, but, you know, like we were talking to Ben Strober about last segment. I mean, you look at this and that trade yesterday, and you go, oh, well, he gets moved all the time. He's just, at this point, bouncing around to where a team needs somebody and gets you 25-8 and then disappear in the playoffs. And that's what's going to happen. But you got teams trying this year. Because here's the thing. You're not going to see teams that have a chance to have a top five pick, top eight, whatever. In the Wizards, we're looking at, you know, not falling out of the top eight. But you're not going to see teams wanting to move those potential picks in this draft. It'll be future picks, and it'll be guys now. And, you know, I remember having a conversation with somebody a couple weeks ago, actually it was like last week, whatever it was, about, you know, this trade deadline in the NBA, and that was the one question I had for him. And this was, you know, an off-the-record conversation. I was just like, look, like, you know, from what you're hearing, is this going to be one of those trade deadlines where a lot of moves are made or where nothing was made? And the one thing that he essentially brought up to me was, you're not going to see picks moved because of this, which, you know, was kind of stating the obvious. But you do see a lot of teams, especially in the East, that see right now and maybe next year, they call it right pre-agency. It was sort of like what the Commanders did with Marshawn Lattimore that we like to forget at this point. But we think the East is open enough where we can make some moves and take advantage of right now. If not this year, then maybe into next year. Because that's really where the East is. The Pistons are the Pistons have been the cream of the crop pretty much in the Eastern Conference this year. But there's one thing we've learned over the years is that you can be a great regular season team in the NBA, but that doesn't always translate to the postseason. In fact, normally, you got to go through some playoff losses, first round, second round, out. The Thunder didn't just win a title right off the bat. I mean, this team had to grow. They were in basically the spot where the Wizards were right now. Again, it's eerily similar with what they're doing, and there's a history there. But then they got into the playoffs, had some playoff losses, and then you finally break through. And they're still super young. But you have to go through those stages. So just because the Pistons are having a great year, like people aren't looking at the Pistons in the East and saying, oh, that's the team this year, right? The Celtics are down Jason Tatum. They're missing their best player this year. Still a pretty good team, but, you know, they're still down. The Knicks started off hot, and now we're looking around going, are they going to trade for Giannis in the next 20 hours or whatever it is? Are we going to be looking at a team that's totally different? Are we gonna, like, there are a lot of questions all the way around the East. Now, the Wizards obviously aren't making those moves for that right now, but the rest of the East is sort of like the Cavs. They are thinking about that right now, and if you're the Wizards, you're thinking about next year. They want, like, I could tell if the Wizards right now, let's just say the Wizards did not have their first round pick. It was already guaranteed to the Knicks. They'd be more aggressive right now. I truly believe that. Because there would not be that thought of, well, what happens if we can get a top three pick or the number one overall pick in a stacked draft? That is their thinking. That's why the thought process is the moves they've made now are about next year, hoping to pair it with a top three pick, another franchise-changing young talent that's going to be the centerpiece of their young core, added with a couple of veterans, help get yourself to that play-in tournament, playoff status, and then you start really tinkering with the long-term view of the roster. That's their plan, and I think it's the right plan. All right, PJ Glasser, live from San Francisco, next on The Fan. It's been one of those weird days where suddenly it's not about football, it's about basketball, which, you know, makes me happy. You know I love the NBA. Love silly season in the NBA. But we do have a Super Bowl coming up, in case you forgot. Maybe because it's the Seahawks and Patriots, and both were long shots to even get there, so, you know, there's that. PJ Glasser, live from San Francisco, jumps on now. Game Day Garage, and also Hoops in 5. And I want to bring this up, PJ, because I was watching your Hoops in 5 video during the break. PJ does a great job with college basketball. It's not just football with him, in case you were wondering. And, of course, you're talking about that the Peterson, the Bansa matchup that we just had recently. But those are obviously two names. The Wizards hope that they can draft this summer. The Anthony Davis trade today, dude. I know we didn't expect to talk about this when you were coming on. But we got to go there first, because I'm assuming that shocked you as much as it shocked everybody else. Yet at the same time, we know they want to make sure that they got a chance to draft one of those guys this summer.
100%. It's weird, Nick. You know, we thought, I mean, just about everybody, that the rebuild would probably last, I mean, over the next couple of years. They're certainly building in the right direction. They've been accumulating picks. They've been drafting guys the last couple of years. But it didn't feel like that, you know, this trade deadline, or maybe even like this summer, they'd start to add more pieces, veterans, especially guys like Anthony Davis, and give away first-round picks. But that's what they decided to do. So getting Trae Young, getting AD, you know, Russell, and then some of these young guys. And like you said, I mean, DeBanza, Peterson, they're going to get the headlines. But, Nick, this freshman class, I mean, there's 7, 8 guys that – just about any other year, like, they could be top two, top three picks. So it is loaded, and I guess the Wizards just feel like, you know, if they can add one of those 7 or 8 great freshmen to AD and Trae Young and the other guys that they have, that maybe they can be competitive in the East next year.
Yeah, and I see a report here now. I was saying this earlier, so this shouldn't surprise anyone, that the Wizards are expected to sit Trae Young and Anthony Davis most of the season, if not all of it. And that makes a ton of sense. But you're right. I mean, there's other guys like Caleb Wilson out of North Carolina, or, you know, Cameron Boozer is another one. Like, there's a lot of names in this draft for the Wizards. Before we get to the NFL, I do just want to say this at least. When you look at where the Wizards are now, doesn't it just feel like, man, they've got a plan? Even if AD and Trae Young are much more short-term, which I think Trae Young definitely should be, you know, I look at this and go, they actually are operating with a blueprint, and they've got steps to take, and they're following them.
They are, and it's refreshing to see, and I'm sure a lot of Wizards fans feel that way. As we know, the front office for the team for the last 20 years, it feels like, just has been one of the worst in the NBA. So bringing in some of these guys that they have the last couple of years, and moving Beal and some other pieces that a bunch of us have kind of wanted for a while. And now they're accumulating picks, Nick, but they're starting to hit on some of these picks. I mean, Sar's been good. Koulibaly's been good. Trey Johnson's had a nice freshman year or rookie year in the NBA. So, like you said, it definitely is nice to see the front office looking like they have a plan. They're executing it. And now it's just, you know, obviously hoping these guys stay healthy, and this upcoming draft being a big one, because now they're going in with AD and Trae Young, and whoever they get with this next pick this year, they really got to nail that.
All right, PJ, There are things that people don't know about you, and there's one thing that people should know, and is that you love to walk around cities, and I mean a lot. You and I were on the same flight to Vegas for the Super Bowl, and I will never forget, you made me walk that entire damn city in Air Max 90s that should not have been walked in, and I my knee hurt for 3 days. How much walking have you done so far?
You know, it's like you're here with me. I'm actually walking around San Francisco as I'm talking to you. So shout out to you for teeing that up. Yeah, 20,000 steps yesterday, Nick. Done a lot of walking today. Also, part of it, I mean, you know where we're living. There's been snow on the ground for over a week. It's been 20 degrees. Nick, when I tell you it is every bit of 65 and sunny today, not a cloud in the sky. So I'd be walking to begin with, but the fact that it's just been perfect weather, I'm taking advantage. So, yes, you would be correct, sir. I am walking quite a bit.
Do I know you or do I know you, Peach?
You do.
I absolutely know you. All right, Seahawks are 4.5-point favorites. And, you know, listen, this is a Seahawks team that has an elite defense going up against a quarterback in Drake May that has not been here before and has not been good in the playoffs. And, you know, this is a game to me where I actually feel like we are in more of a spot where defense wins this game. Are you in the same boat?
100%. My favorite bet is the under in this game. Two defensive head coaches in McDonald and Vrabel, 2 weeks to prepare. And look, Mike McDonald has been a coach, Nick, in 4 playoff games. 2 as the head coach for Seattle, 2 with Baltimore as their defensive coordinator. His teams have pitched a shutout in the playoffs in the second half in 3 of those 4 playoff games. He did it twice with the Ravens. He did it against the Niners in the divisional round. The Rams were the only team to score on his defense in the second half. So he is unbelievable at adjusting. You look at the Patriots and how good their defense has been this postseason, and Vrabel's teams have been great in the second half as well. So, yeah, I mean, with 2 coaches, Vrabel in his first year with New England and McDonald in his second year with Seattle, you mentioned, you know, Drake May being a young guy, Darnold playing in his first Super Bowl. It's just all the makings to me of a low-scoring game. I kind of feel like the first of 20 is going to win it.
You know, I got to be honest with you, man. I'm rooting for Sam Darnold. I mean, for him to suffer the way that he did playing for the Jets, who just ruined everybody's career, and then he deals with the Panthers, who were a complete mess when he was there, to take the scenic route to success the way that he has, it just shows that not every quarterback is instantly ready necessarily to start in the NFL, but it doesn't mean that they can't down the road.
I mean, and we see this all the time, right? Like, sometimes guys just need a fresh start. We've seen it with Baker, obviously, in Tampa Bay. I mean, there's been a bunch of different cases of this, and Darnold is the latest. So much of it is with coaching, and he's been fortunate with, you know, O'Connell and Shanahan kind of fine-tuning him a little bit and getting him up to speed in the NFL, and he's been awesome this season. Nick, I am so intrigued by him in the Super Bowl because, as you know, the big conversation around the Seahawks coming into the playoffs, they were the number one seed. They had that great home field, but it didn't feel like a lot of people were really picking them. It was a lot of Eagles. It was a lot of Rams, and it was because none of us really trusted Darnold, right? In all these big games, it seems like he comes up short, but he's been great in these first 2 playoff games. And I just find it interesting that now coming into the Super Bowl, you don't really feel like a lot of people are talking about, is Sam going to, you know, are the lights going to be too bright? Is he going to turn back into a pumpkin, like all this thing? So he's played 2 games at home as a favorite. What's he going to look like against a really good defense, neutral site? I think it's really intriguing. Is he going to continue to play like this, or is this the game where kind of Darnold turns into what a lot of us thought he would be coming into the playoffs?
All right, now I know it's probably different out there, but before you got there, did it feel like there was less buzz around this Super Bowl? I felt like it was more, honestly, about Bad Bunny.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah, it did. I think, you know, the championship games took a lot of... I feel like that Bo Nix injury really threw a wrench.
Wait, the what Nix injury? What Nix?
The Bo Nix. I'm out in San Francisco. The Bo Nix injury, Nick, it feel like took a lot of steam out of championship week, you know, because played great against Buffalo, and then he's doing the interview with Tracy Wolfson, and we get the reports, the tweets that he's out. We're like, what's going on? It does feel this way. I think, like you said at the initial point of the interview, was how both of these teams were big long shots coming into the year. And we've been so used to the last 20, 25 years, Mahomes, Brady, mm-hmm. the same quarterbacks, teams in the Super Bowl. So you rarely see this in the NFL where you get two long shots preseason that are playing for the Lombardi. I think that's maybe why there's not a lot of steam around it. So I agree with you. But at the end of the day, you know, when that game kicks off on Sunday, it's the final football NFL game we get until September. So I think people will be locked in. And I do think it's going to be a good game. You know, I told you I think it's going to be low scoring. And because, you know, I think it's going to be low scoring, I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be competitive. When New England and Seattle get together, regardless of who the coaches are, who the players on the teams are, there's something about those two when they play. The games are always close. And I think this one's going to be no different.
All right, Peach, what happens in this game?
I think Seattle wins. I think it's going to be close, though. So for people out there that are betting the game, I would take New England plus the 4.5. I think it's going to be about a 3-point game. I'm feeling like 20-17 Seattle, Nick. I think it's going to be close. I think the Seahawks are going to find a way. They're the better team. I think they have the better coach. And I think Darnold and that offense just enough to get a win. So I'll take the Seahawks by 3.
All right, so a Patriots cover and a Seahawks outright win and win the Super Bowl. You know, these are the matchups when I look and think of Back to the Future 2 when Biff had the ability to just see into the future and know all the bets that he can make. And I go, damn, man, Seahawks-Patriots matchup would have paid out quite a bit, my friend. Good to talk to you, PJ. Get those 20,000 steps in.
Yes, sir, Nick. I'm getting 20,000 more in tomorrow, my friend. I'll talk to you soon.
Oh, PJ is nothing but consistent, that's for sure. Check out Hoops in 5 with him on Instagram and Game Day Garage as well. He's a part of that franchise, which I've heard is growing pretty quickly, to say the least. Listen, there is not a lot of buzz for this Super Bowl compared to the past, and it is absolutely the quarterback matchup. And there's not a lot of hate for this Patriots team. It's more of people just like, God, it's the Patriots again. But there's not really, you don't have that Tom Brady, Bill Belichick venom, and I think that's the difference. We've had a lot of good news today, a lot of exciting news. Then there was the other side of things at the Washington Post today. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Nick Ashew on the Fan, thanks to PJ Glasser, getting his 20,000 steps in. PJ is consistent, and there's no joke, by the way. We were on the same flight out of BWI into Vegas, and we went to that Super Bowl, and I'll never forget. That's the first time I've walked all of Vegas, like literally all of it, because all PJ wanted to do when we landed there. Granted, it was early in the morning, but it's Vegas, and there's a lot of other things you want to do. Nope, just wanted to walk and go see the Pawn Stars place, which we did, and it was cool. But, you know, it's just, yeah, the Super Bowl is just different this year. And also, too, like, listen, there's been a lot of stuff going on in the D.C. sports landscape, and the Anthony Davis trade is overtaken today, and the Washington Post has had some great coverage. Oh, wait, that's right. They got rid of everybody. Look, here's the thing that I will say, and I know a lot of people are angry about this, and you should, and I've been in that position where I have been a part of something that has been mismanaged and completely just disintegrated. And, you know, there are people in our industry that have put in a lot of work, especially those true journalists, right? We do still need that. I understand. Like, listen, I am a big believer in digital content and social media. I literally have a small business that is built around that now. I'm building a company around that. And I understand that trends change, technology changes. I'm a very tech-forward person. But you can take a legacy media company, right? Something that has been around forever, like the Washington Post or anybody else. You can take that, and you do have the ability to see the trends and see where technology and where people's attention is going and all of these changes and the evolution that we're seeing in all walks of life, not just sports media. You can see that. And if you actually invest just a little time and just a little effort into video content, for example, you'd be surprised how much success you can actually have. Because if a random dude in Wyoming can make tons of money off his YouTube channel, I think when you go behind the brand of something like the Washington Post, you too can use that brand, because brands are more important than ever in today's world. You can use that and you can monetize it in other ways. But you have to make the effort. And there's a lot of people that are either former Washington Post employees, well, from a long time ago, or from right now, talking about the lack of effort that was there. talking about the lack of effort from a, you know, evolution perspective, not just in sports, but in everything there. Because it wasn't just sports, let's be honest. From apparently there was somebody that is literally in a war zone right now that was laid off in the middle of a war zone. And by the way, this is by emails. Emails were sent. Now, this isn't a surprise to a lot of people. Kind of knew this was coming. I had talked to some people the other day that said, like, hey, get ready. Like, there's going to be a lot of people from the Washington Post that are going to be, you know, losing their job. Like, this is a conversation in our industry. But I understand that things change and things evolve, right? Like, I'm the first person to tell you that is absolutely something you need to embrace. Because technology, trends, in terms of how people consume media, is going to continue. What runs our interests in this country is tech, period. They have a stranglehold. The tech industry has a stranglehold on everything in this country. And you are not in a place, unless you are in the tech industry, to make that change. But what you can do is have the foresight to understand where the changes are, how people are consuming that media, how people are just what their daily trends are, what their daily interests are, how, like, all of this stuff. It shouldn't be about one form. It shouldn't just be about you. If you are a sports media company, it shouldn't just be about written, shouldn't just be about video, shouldn't just be about live. It shouldn't be about short form, you know, Instagram and TikTok and all that. It should be about everything. You have to cast a wide net in today's business landscape. I mean, we're at the point now where every company in America has the opportunity to be their own brand and have their own media arm. Small, big, whatever. You have that ability to do it. But you have to understand what works and what doesn't, and you have to put in that effort. And true survival and evolution is understanding where industries are going and making that change accordingly. And some do and some don't. And you can't tell me that somebody like Jeff Bezos owning the Washington Post doesn't understand where technology is going, doesn't understand where the trends are. Now, I understand there's a lot of other things going on, but why buy the Washington Post if you're not going to change it, if you're not going to help it evolve? The New York Times has done that. Because it's not about the physical newspaper. This is what people need to get by. It's about the brand, the Washington Post, and what that means and what that represents and what the history of that is, but also what that can be in the future. And they had two choices. It was to evolve it or to let it die, and they decided to let it die. Today is a death of the Washington Post. And today is it's a dark day for anybody that just enjoys DC sports or just sports in general. I mean, I've seen this, and this is why I get, you know, so frustrated with owners in sports, right? Bad ownership and the trickle-down effect and how it affects the entire organization and fan bases, and it continues to, you know, they're not held accountable at all. And I don't care about, like, the risk they take by buying a team. You can flip the team in a year and make money. Like, it's an easy investment. The point is that there also should be some level of accountability for the results that you have owning a team, and there should be a level of accountability for the people in charge of media companies if they continue to have a lack of success. But yet in the end, it's not the people making the decisions that get sacrificed. It's the people that are doing their job and doing it well that end up getting sacrificed. Producers, talent, all of that. And yeah, this hits home for me. Trust me. Doesn't take much of a Google search to find that out. This has happened a lot with a lot of companies.
So I just want to say, too, it's not just the sports stuff, too. Like, I have a friend that works there, not on the sports side. And they told me also all staff photographers were laid off today at the Washington Post. They have no staff photographers at a newspaper now.
I mean, what are you doing? Again, like, it's and you're right. It's far beyond. Like I said, there was a reporter in a war zone that found out they were laid off while they're in the middle of a war zone. Like, what are we doing with an email? I mean, you are taking away the core function of this entire. I mean, nobody's going to take the Washington Post seriously anymore. Who would take it seriously? Like, what is the plan at all here? And, you know, you get to the point now where you wonder whether any of these big media companies really truly want to evolve and honestly just grow with what the future holds. Like, I guess that's the best way to put it now. And you're right, Chris, like, no staff photographers. I mean, that's a basic function. It's not like there's some small startup that, like, look, got to make some cutbacks. This is just it. Like, I mean, listen, I consume social media all the time. I am across the board on all forms of media, period. Like, I embrace it all. But if we're getting to the point now where we're sacrificing all of that, and the Washington Post, of all places, will do this much and put this many people out on the street, that's scary. And that's a lack of effort. And I know for a fact that, at least from the sports side of things, and I would assume it trickles in other places, there was a lack of effort for any evolution, any change, any growth, trying anything new, seeing the way that the industry was going and doing anything about it. Talk, and no results. And yet in the end, the decision makers that were not held accountable, but were held to a responsibility to keep a business running smoothly, instead get to keep their jobs, while the people that were doing their jobs well, sometimes just doing what they were supposed to do because that's the direction they were given by leadership, they're the ones that are sacrificed. And that's what's wrong. It's not that the landscape is changing. It's not that trends are changing. It's not that Gen Z is much more getting their news on TikTok and Instagram. And I understand all of that. And Substack is a big, like, all of these things are viable sources now. Whether you like it or not, they exist. But to have the result just be, well, I don't know, just going to throw our hands up and, hey, yeah, we'll try. Nothing's going to work. Let's just fire everybody. The people that did not do their job well, that were in charge, that were given the responsibility to make this better, they didn't do their job. And yet they're not being held accountable. And that's what pisses me off the most. And I've seen it too often in our industry, and it pisses me off. And it pisses a lot of people off. And what you're going to do is you're going to lose talented people that are going to go to other industries that are going to take care of them. Nick Ashew on The Fan.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.